Wintrust Business Lunch. By the way, we always ask our listeners on Monday, Elise, what did you do over the weekend? And among the things that people sent in, hey, John, I spent the weekend and continue today painting our bedroom in our 115-year-old farmhouse. But that's okay because I listened to WGN while painting and love listening to Lou Manfredini on Saturday morning. Wonder if that person was painting Sunday morning at 6:30, for that matter. How are you, Elise?
I'm fine. I was laughing because I live in like a 115 or 125-year-old farmhouse, and we were painting also this weekend, just tidying up for the holidays.
I live in a 112 or 20-year-old house, and this weekend I got little heaters and put them in the bathrooms where the pipes are maybe too close to the walls to keep them from going kapow.
Probably a really good move, and it probably saved you thousands of dollars in plumbing bills.
Well, we didn't do that last year when the second floor bathroom exploded.
No.
And Brenda walked into the kitchen with water raining into the first floor, which started on the second floor and went down into the basement.
Oops.
So, yeah, we put heaters in the bathrooms this year. But enough about my woes. Life is good, and that's why you have insurance. Let's talk a little bit about Bob Iger. Why is this getting so much attention? Why is that such big news?
Well, this is kind of interesting. You know, Bob Iger, who was the CEO, chairman of the board at Disney for a long time, credited with building up the brand, building up the revenue, creating this juggernaut. He finally retired. He had chosen a guy named Chapek, as who had worked for the company for years, as his chosen successor. And out of the blue on Friday, Disney called Iger and said, "Yeah, we don't like Chapek so much. Can you come back?" He said, "Okay." And by Sunday, Chapek was out. And that was just, it blindsided Chapek, who thought that he was doing the things that the board wanted him to do, apparently. He's out. He's probably going to get a payday of maybe 23 to 25 million bucks for his trouble, plus some shares of stock that I'm sure he got as well. And now we're back to Iger again, and Iger promises that he's going to have a different process for choosing his next successor.
That's what you call a golden parachute, isn't it?
Well, these days that might be a golden parachute, but I just got off the phone with a company that was talking about the $100 million payday they're arranging for their CEO. So, I don't know. I think it's all perspective. Maybe we could call it nickel, silver. Still pretty good, and I'd take it in a heartbeat.
Was the company underperforming under this guy's leadership?
I think Disney has been underperforming for a while, and I think people are concerned. But look at what's going on. You know, one of the things that he did was he just restructured how they're charging people at the parks. And we had some friends over for dinner last night who just got back from Disney World in Florida. And they were saying that the cost per day now is nearly $200 per person. But that's just the beginning of it, because then you can pay for the fast pass. You can pay for a guide for the fast pass. And then, you know, the food prices go up from there. And so Disney has really generated a bigger amount of money from its kind of daily traffic at their different parks, their theme parks. However, one of the big cost sucks is the streaming service. So Disney Plus is making some money, but it's making nowhere near the revenue that I think the analysts outside the company wanted to see.
Well, that to me would be the biggest challenge. I mean, the theme parks are proven commodities. People like to go there, figure out the pricing structures. But this streaming service world is the Wild West. It's so competitive. It's so expensive. There's such demand. The prices are going up because I guess they got to raise the prices to cover their costs. But then people say, skip it all. What's the equivalent of cutting the cable? I'll stop the service. I think that's a very challenging space, don't you?
I do, and especially challenging coming off of a pandemic where basically these companies reinvented themselves, and people I think the new, is it Wakanda Forever?
Yeah.
Movie has come out, and that's doing incredibly well. I think it's over almost $600 million globally. But that's the first real, you know, that and I think Maverick were the first two box office breakout hits. We've had a few. Spider-Man was good too, but you're not seeing the same kind of people going to the movies and making that investment there. And so I think there's a real balancing act that's shaking out since the pandemic.
We're talking with Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch from thinkglink.com. She's the co-host of our Sunday show at 6:30 with Tom Fortino, This Week in Wealth. Talk to me about Thanksgiving. How much money are people spending? Are they traveling? Stuff like that.
Oh, my goodness. According to AAA, 55 million people are going to travel more than 50 miles ahead of Thanksgiving. That is a little bit of an increase over 2021, about 1.5%. But we are seeing that it is the third busiest Thanksgiving on the roads ever. And if you were going to the Northeast, you may want to rethink that until Buffalo gets those streets cleared out, John.
Yeah, I saw some of the video and heard a lot of that area is still under a snow alert just because of the 80 inches, 8-0 they got in some places.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of silly. And here we are, you know, complaining of a little cold snap over the weekend, which now we've got beautiful weather coming up. So nice driving weather, especially if you're going to go west. Gas prices, really interesting to see. It's going to cost you to do all that driving. Right now, Illinois is among the highest for average prices. We're averaging around $4 a gallon, but Cook County is $4.30 a gallon. And if you look out on the West Coast, that's where we are. You know, we're kind of equivalent to what's going on with basically most of the western, very western region, I would say west of the Rockies. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit to the further west than that. But any case, that's where we're sort of equal. And if you look more deeply at the cost for gas on the AAA website, which you can go and see, what you see is that the whole metro Chicago area, right from the Wisconsin state line all the way down to near where we cross Indiana by Gary, is, you know, over at $4 a gallon. It's pretty expensive out there.
How about flying? Are people flying this holiday too?
People are flying as well. The prices for airfare has really just gone up so significantly. People, and of course, airlines are raking in quite a bit of profit right now, but that's only because they just don't have enough planes in the air. Every plane is running more than full. So if you are going to the airport, whether it's here or in your destination to come back, make sure you're leaving lots and lots of time to get through security. In Chicago, it seems to run pretty well, but I have been in a couple of different airports around the country where the lines were just extraordinarily long. They didn't have enough people on hand for security to go through. And so you might want to leave, I hate to say it, for domestic flights, 2 to 2.5 hours to get
really?
To the airport before
really?
Your flight.
Really?
Yeah,
don't
I'm sorry.
Say that. Don't say that. Is there a consensus? Is Midway better than Chicago for all of that?
I haven't been to Midway in the last, that's not true. I guess I was at Midway in the last year. I don't think there's a consensus. You know, I fly more just because of where I live out of O'Hare. And I would say, you know, normally O'Hare works pretty well. You just don't want to go on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon, right?
Talk to me about Thanksgiving. What's the cost comparison?
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting, John. I mean, we've been hearing about inflation going up, you know, anywhere from 7% to 9% this year. Of course, it stayed a little bit lower than what, say, the UK is experiencing at over 10% inflation. But that doesn't mean that the price of a, you know, U.S. family Thanksgiving dinner hasn't gone through the roof. It has. And top of the list is turkey prices. So when I had seen that turkey prices were up 24% this year, which I think is pretty significant. I mean, it's way above what everything else is. I looked a little deeper, and of course, avian flu has really hit the turkey population. Chicken too, right? All birds. But 8 million turkeys have died. It's about 3% of the annual turkey production. And that just raised costs all the way up, since this is, you know, seriously, between now and Christmas is a very big turkey time of year, shall we say. But then there were all the other costs as well. So as you're paying more for gas to drive to your Thanksgiving dinner, truckers are paying more to drive turkeys all around where they have to get to. And so all of that has come to play in this increase in prices of 24%. But mashed potatoes are up 20%. Side salad. Do you eat a side salad, John, at Thanksgiving?
I have my favorite salads, but not the typical lettuce salad. I don't think we're having one of those.
I I think they're talking about, you know, lettuce salad. I used to make a side salad for Thanksgiving, and it would completely get untouched. I've stopped making it. So I'm saving 9% there. cranberry sauce up 9%. And again, that was weather related. Most of the cranberries come from the bogs out in the East Coast. And then pumpkin pie from scratch will run you an additional 23 to 75%. I ate one from Costco last night, and it was delicious and about $7. So, you know, there you have it.
I saw the pies at Walmart over the weekend. Brenda and I were there to do some major shopping, and they look so, you know, I told Brenda, we should not come into this store hungry.
Yeah.
Which is true for any grocery store, but it's just so abundant there. And they have so many ways to get you. You know what I saw was, and I was not a big proponent of Krispy Kreme going into grocery stores. I thought, you know, the exclusive Krispy Kreme stores made them that much more desirable. You had to wait in line, and it just,
right.
Created more demand. Anyway, and then they went to the grocery stores, and then they had some trouble. But they had mini pumpkin spice flavored Krispy Kreme curlers, little tiny curler bites of pumpkin spice flavored donuts. And I thought, that looks pretty good. That
so
looks
how
like
many
a good
of those
idea.
Made it out of the store, John, is really what we all want to know.
They did not find their way into my cart in principle, but they I'll bet they did sell some of those. We are out of time. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for the updates, Elise.
You too, John.
That's Elise Glink. Jim Dahlke joins us now. He's the senior editor over at Chicago Inno. Don't you hate it, Jim, when you go to your bank account and you're like $8 billion short of what you need for something? Does that ever happen to you?
Boy, oh boy, I know. If we all were even in one sliver of the problems that FTX is in, we would be in some real trouble.
Talk to me a little bit about this. Everybody's talking about it. There's been considerable reporting. What happened and what's the latest?
Yeah, so FTX, has grown into one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. This is a platform where you can go to buy and sell cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, but many others. FTX really, became super, super prominent, even beyond cryptocurrency circles. I mean, you'll remember this was the company that had Super Bowl commercials. You know, Larry David was in that ad. You know, they had Tom Brady on board for a ton of advertising. They renamed the Miami Heat basketball arena after FTX. All the umpires in baseball had FTX patches. So they really kind of became a part of society in a way that I think a lot of other crypto firms hadn't. They are in bankruptcy. There's a lot that went down for FTX, but this is a business that was previously valued at $32 billion. CEO Sam Bankman-Fried has resigned, and there was basically an en masse withdrawal of funds from FTX's account, which left them with about $8 billion shortfall. What's interesting here to me is kind of what does this mean for other crypto startups? I think we're still sort of in the very early stages of this, but if you look at this from a venture capital startup perspective, FTX's implosion actually would rank as the largest capital loss in venture capital history. Investors poured over $2 billion into FTX for a little comparison. That's over $1 billion more than what Theranos raised.
I've also heard it compared to a Madoff-type scandal, although that would imply that they were doing something intentionally wrong, that they were skimming off it, that they didn't have the money they claimed to have, et cetera. What is there a short answer to how, where did the money go? What happened?
The short answer is there is certainly a fear of that. We are kind of really in the middle of uncovering exactly what went down and what improprieties there were, but that's certainly an area of concern for lots of folks. Within FTX's trading, it had sister companies or was borrowing money from. There's going to be a lot that's going to be uncovered here, and there's going to be a lot that we learn in the future. But that's certainly a big piece of this. And I think from here on out, you know, we have to determine what does this, you know, what does this mean for other companies in the space? I think we can expect to see other businesses falter who are kind of operating in the cryptocurrency industry. Venture investing in crypto startups was already on the decline. VC firms invested about $4.4 billion in crypto startups in the third quarter of this year. That's more than 37% down from the same quarter last year. So investment analysts expect crypto and funding to continue to recede in 2023. And so, there's a lot to uncover here, and we're still learning a lot. But, yeah, it's certainly not good for the crypto industry.
And it's not the currency. It's the exchange that is upside down here, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, so basically, you know, if you had money in crypto in FTX's exchange, it's a very good chance you did not get your money back right now. And so it's kind of a bit of a holding pattern. But, yeah, I mean, they found themselves about, like you said, $8 billion short as folks were pulling money out of the exchange en masse. And so, you know, there's several other exchanges right now. You know, Coinbase, of course, the U.S.-based exchange, publicly traded. You know, they believe that their business is still sound. You know, they're not having any withdrawal issues at the moment. You know, Gemini is another one that's led by the Winklevoss twins. So, you know, time will tell how this, you know, continues to affect other exchanges and the industry at large.
I saw one headline today, 10 companies or stakeholders are out $100 million on this thing, to say nothing of the rest of the people that have lost money on this. Let's talk about the Chicago Innovation Awards. What is that and who won?
Yeah, the Chicago Innovation Awards has been going on for several years now. Really, it's just kind of a way to amplify what's going on in kind of the tech and innovation sectors, and they do an annual awards event pretty much every year. And one of the interesting categories in their awards every year is the up-and-comer awards. So think of this kind of like startup of the year, sort of new product, new company mm-hmm. that you should have your eye on. And the business we've read about quite a bit, it's called Plui. They have created a self-sanitizing diaper station. It's designed for public restrooms. It's got a patented UV light system that can sort of self-sanitize a diaper changing station when you close it. Having a two-year-old and having seen diaper changing stations up close really for the sort of the first time over the last couple of years, I could say this is certainly a much-needed product, and it's interesting to watch them grow. They've gotten their changing stations into the White Sox Stadium, among other places. So a much-needed product here from Plui.
Any other companies you want to highlight?
Yeah, there's a bunch on here that you know that we've written a lot about, and then you know some others that maybe don't quite fit in the tech quote unquote sphere. But the Lincoln Park Zoo was awarded here. Lincoln Park Zoo has actually done some really interesting technology stuff. They've been kind of monitoring the location of animals throughout the zoo, and you know whether the zoo needs to install different kind of shaded areas or different sort of elements of the park that are better for them, sort of tracking them movement by movement. So even though the zoo, not exactly what you would qualify as a tech business, certainly using technology. And then Valkyrie is a Chicago startup that's created essentially a drone mailbox. So, hey, if we're going to have drone deliveries some days, you know, we're going to need a place for these deliveries to actually drop your items. And so Valkyrie is creating smart mailboxes for drones to deliver products.
Talk to me about Better Trucks.
Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot, you know, here, John, about the growth of the logistics tech sector. You know, despite the downturn this year, we're still seeing a lot of momentum in logistics tech. Chicago has been a long-time logistics hub, and the technology sector here is really doing well. There's a local startup called Better Trucks. It's a tech-driven last-mile delivery carrier built for digital commerce. They just raised $15 million, a handful of funds in this round, including Corazon Capital, a local firm here in Chicago. So, yeah, while we're seeing, you know, certainly a bit of a tech downturn, the logistics tech industry continues to be a bit of a bright spot here in Chicago.
All the time we've got. Always interesting talking to you. Thanks for the heads up and the help today, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke, senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Dave Schwein has more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Bally's Corporation announced it's closed a deal to the tune of $200 million for the Tribune Publishing Center site for its Bally's Chicago location. It's a 99-year ground lease deal for land at Chicago Avenue and Halsted. Bally's is billing the site as the Best of Chicago, a destination casino, hotel, and entertainment center. The project gives Bally's the exclusive right to operate a temporary casino for up to 3 years before the permanent casino is built. Are you on the road this Thanksgiving? You'll like this. Gas Buddy reports average gas prices in Chicago fell 19 cents a gallon last week, averaging $4.18. That's over 30 cents a gallon lower than a month ago. And AAA says you won't be alone on the road. Most of the 55 million people traveling this Thanksgiving will be driving. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
And here's a tease.
He was the godfather of food porn.
We'll find out who she's talking about after I tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience live in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, the godfather of food porn? One of the biggest names ever in Chicago's business of food.
You can't overstate Charlie Trotter's contribution to American cuisine. And you certainly can't overstate his importance in putting Chicago on the map for food.
Her name is Rebecca Halpern. She's writer and director of Love, Charlie, a documentary that screens tonight at the Music Box Theater. It's a fascinating story of how Chuck Trotter, a well-met kid who was a star gymnast at New Trier, became Charlie Trotter, one of the world's most influential chefs.
Our Instagram feeds would not look like they look today, but for Charlie Trotter's groundbreaking photography and his coffee table style cookbooks.
He introduced us to the tasting menu, the 10-course meals of small artistic portions assembled with tweezers containing things we've never heard of.
Quinoa. No one was using quinoa in 1987. Vegetarianism. He really pioneered putting vegetables front and center on a fine dining menu.
And microgreens. It was Charlie who helped to make them popular. And the idea for meal kits, you know, Blue Apron. Charlie Trotter was decades ahead.
That wasn't popularized until 10 or 15 years later when Martha Stewart started doing that.
And the idea for a table in the kitchen?
Charlie Trotter was the first American chef to do that.
Charlie Trotter's star burned oh so brightly for 25 years. He died of a stroke at age 54. Some really big name chefs praise him in the film, but he could be difficult.
People thought it was a tyrant, but really he was just pursuing excellence in everything he did. That's innate. That's ingrained. And Charlie had it in spades. And unfortunately, it was to his detriment.
You can see Love, Charlie tonight in the big theater at the Music Box.
And a very special Q&A with some of Chicago's greatest chefs.
Chef Art Smith will moderate.
I think it's going to be an amazing, amazing night.
7 o'clock tonight, and it'll be showing up at other theaters and on demand, too. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Bankrate writer covering the Federal Reserve and the economy and policy is Sarah Foster, joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Sarah.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me again, John.
Yeah, let's talk about younger people and the pressures they feel at the holidays, which may be different than what their parents feel. What's the story here?
Yeah, well, I think what we're seeing is that younger Americans are feeling all of that pressure that everyone else is feeling right now with the hottest inflation in 40 years, the highest credit card financing rates on record, of course, rising recession risks. But they're feeling it in a way that's even more dramatic than their older generations and the fact that they're expecting that they're going to spend more than they're comfortable with. And I think there's just so much at play here as far as the reasons why, and it really all comes down to these unique social pressures that they face.
Like what?
Those are, well, for example, we found that younger Americans are more likely to travel during the holiday season. And so, in fact, according to a separate survey from Bankrate, we found that 39% of Gen Z, 44% of millennials, they say they aren't going to travel. But the number of Gen Xers and baby boomers who say they aren't is dramatically higher at 60% and 74% for both those generations. So
I saw that in your story, and I thought, it's so true. Everybody goes home to mom's or goes home to grandma's. So that means the younger you are, the more likely it is you have to travel during the holiday when gas and airplane tickets are much higher. So my idea is, as a Christmas gift to the people coming to your house, subsidize their travel. Here's a $100 gift card for the gas. Here is we'll buy your plane ticket. Buy one of the plane. I don't know what it is, but at least appreciate that the people traveling are bearing an expense when they walk in the door, right?
Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I mean, when you think about why people might be feeling the pressure to spend more than they're comfortable with, especially those younger generations. I think it's because obviously you have to pay for the travel, which is heavily inflated on top of the gifts, on top of all of the gatherings. And at the same time, we also know that food prices are heavily inflated. So there's really nowhere anyone can hide from inflation during the holiday seasons, but especially so for those younger Americans who are traveling.
You also said that social platforms exacerbate the pressure to spend for younger people. How so?
So I think it's interesting when we look at social media, especially for younger Americans, because of course we know that they're at this point in their lives where it's important for them to fit in. And a lot of the ways that they build that social, you know, interaction is, I think, comes down to what they post about on social media, the products that they find about inherently from other people's posts. And then, of course, the heavy prevalence of buy now, pay later, which is circulating on the platforms, as well as integrated payment models. I think it's really ubiquitous with personal finances and social media. And it's fascinating to look at the fact that so many Americans, especially younger ones, say that they've regretted purchases that they've made of products that they've seen on social media.
I guess we're all guilty of that, but I suppose it's more acute with younger people. It does ring true. The younger people feel more inclined to post their experiences rather than their parents or grandparents. I get that. You all posted some suggestions. What are some of the ideas to sort of insulate ourselves from this?
Yeah, well, I think what's most important, obviously, is keeping an eye on your budget, knowing who you're shopping for, how much you can spend, and then trying as hard as you possibly can to stick with it. So, for example, if you're someone who's having to pay for an airline ticket home right now, maybe it's time to sit down and have a conversation with your family about potentially saying, you know, we might have to skip out on gifts, at least from my point of view. Or even, you know, it comes down to just getting creative as well. That could include splitting gifts with other people, maybe your siblings, for example, or even creating something that might be even more meaningful than something that would cost a lot of money right now.
You guys also, some of these are like obvious, but I also think it's helpful just to see, read, and think about them again. Don't push shopping off to the last minute. You're either not going to get what you want or you'll be inclined to overspend because you couldn't find what you wanted. So do it now or do it already would be good advice.
Yeah, and this is the key point here that I think what's obviously right now, the inflation situation has lingered for so long in the broader economy. But what's unique about this holiday season is that retailers are sitting on a surplus of inventory. A lot of them are trying to get rid of that inventory. And then retail analysts say that they're likely going to introduce some of the biggest discounts that we've really ever seen. I mean, for example, have Amazon Prime Day occurring twice a year. That's something that's never happened before, but it happened in 2022. And so I think that's something that really underscores the reason of, you know, keeping track of discounts, shopping as much as you can, because the longer window you have, the better you will be at safeguarding your wallet from inflation.
Well, you did say don't think that value shopping. How did you put it? Know that talking about money and setting expectations does not have to ruin your holiday spirit. We all know we're in this together, and, you know, money's tight. Even when it's not tight, this is the wrong time to be overspending if you can avoid it. I wanted to mention one other thing. Don't shy away from gift certificates. You guys like that idea too, huh?
And I think it's really funny when you think about it, because obviously gift certificates are something that's kind of considered taboo in the holiday, you know, American lexicon. Obviously, you want to get something that requires thought. Seems like there's this misconception, I think, frankly, that gift certificates are boring. But in this high inflationary environment, what matters is that the money that you're spending is going to use. I mean, you don't want to be someone who, you know, buys an ugly sweater for someone. And so I think that the gift cards, at least you know that you're giving someone something that will be useful and then that they can use it to fund a purchase. And then, you know, at the end of the day, for your perspective, you know, as the individual gift buyer, at least you know that a gift certificate is very well, I mean, you control how much you spend on it.
Well, there you go. So it's easy to budget for that.
Yeah.
Sarah Fostit's a Bankrate writer, and she covers the Federal Reserve, among other things, at Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you, Sarah. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.